Hi, Art Supply Posse. Joining us today is a guest who combines two of the world's great loves, that being art and chocolate. She is a bean-to-bar chocolate sommelier, a judge and a reviewer of chocolate, and a multisensory artist. How she manages to pack all those things into one little bio is pretty incredible, but I guess that's why she's here to talk about it all. Hi, Jessica. Welcome to the Art Supply Posse.
Hello, Kim. Hello, hello.
Thank you so much for taking time to join me. I really, really appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. Thank you for the invitation to join. Looking forward to chatting.
I kind of gave the listeners a very brief rundown of who you are and what you do. But how about in your own words, you kind of describe for us what exactly you do with your art and your chocolate lives?
Yeah, of course. So with my art, well, they join each other together. So
yeah.
One informs, they each inform the other. I think to put them all under one thing, it's I'm very curious and I love to explore, and you do that via your senses, and I do that a lot by different colors and a lot by different smells and tastes and just what you experience in the world around you. And I found that I can do that. The two mediums that I really enjoy the most doing that with is with chocolate, which is taste, and it's also aroma, and with color. So how you can connect those two and how you can make pockets of wonder from connecting two things that people probably don't generally connect in daily life. Yeah, I suppose that's how you'd put them together. Yeah.
I think it's a really fascinating way to combine things that you're passionate about, things that are part of your life in a really big way. And I love that you have brought the senses that aren't so much visual, which is, you know, when we think about art, we quite often think about visual senses, although it's not only visual, of course, we have auditory and, you know, but the fact that you've taken these two things and melded them into your world, your life, but also sharing that with others is pretty fantastic. I'd like to sort of hop back to the start of your beginnings with these things. How did you come to be so passionate about chocolate and wanting to bring that to others, and then also that decision to bring art into that as well?
Yeah, sure. So chocolate's always been part of my existence. Sort of, you know, growing up, we had Chocolate Night once a week, and that would last you for the week. And it was just the things you buy from the supermarket. And then I moved to Melbourne. I grew up in Tasmania, and I moved to Melbourne in my late teens and studied creative arts, and then moved and became and studied as an occupational therapist. And that's when I discovered how much of our life is impacted by our senses. Continue on from sort of the being an occupational therapist and being in that sort of world. When we got to the Melbourne lockdowns, they were always, up until the Melbourne lockdowns, they were two very separate things. And when the Melbourne lockdowns came in, I started to look up things that I could investigate, could put time in, because we had time to train myself in, to discover, to learn. and I discovered this thing called craft chocolate. And I thought it was just another sort of craft thing that had been brought out, sort of like craft cheese. But then also it said craft. So to me, craft is you're making something with your hands. So I went down a bit of a rabbit hole and discovered this whole industry of a different way of making chocolate, where the chocolate maker knows the person who's growing the beans, and that when you actually taste this chocolate, it has flavor that is not just the flavor of chocolate. It has flavors of fruits and nuts and berries and citrus and all sorts of things, floral notes. And I was like, I need to try this. So I managed to acquire some and started tasting, and then just sort of jotted down what I was tasting. And it was really mind-blowing because I'm intolerant and allergic to a number of things, but I have a very strong memory of those things when I tasted them in the past. And so then when tasting this chocolate, I was discovering all these things that I hadn't tasted for a very long time through the flavor notes of the chocolate. So I started writing those down and taking pictures of them and just sort of not really doing anything with them. And my sister I was living with at the time, encouraged me to put them on Instagram. She said they were really good and the picture was good, what I was writing was good. I should put it up there. And it just kind of went from there. I discovered this very big online community because everyone had to go online because of the pandemic. Then I discovered that I could train in how to taste and how to be a sommelier. But then at the same time, like if I look back at what I used to be tasting and how I'd write and the photos I took and how I now use what I taste and what I do with that now, it's evolved. And yeah, I suppose that's kind of the genesis story of it. Yeah.
When you're honing your ability to taste the different components that make up any particular chocolate, is that some kind of thing that requires you to like not have eaten or had anything to drink in a certain time before, so as that isn't like lingering in your mouth and would affect it? Because like I don't know, that might sound like a basic question to you, but like I've never done anything in that way, shape or form, so I wonder how do you, aside from just eating lots of chocolate, how do you kind of get to know the different flavors and notes and things?
Yeah, for sure. So the best thing is to have not had anything to eat, or at least cleaned your mouth out, like washed your mouth out with water. Don't clean your teeth because then you'll have a mint taste in your mouth. So that's the best starting spot. So that's kind of where I go from. And to taste bean to bar chocolate, it's generally a very meditative practice or a thing to do because you suck it. So my general way of tasting is I will sit down often with pen and paper and warm water because that helps the chocolate melt a little bit. If you've got a cold mouth, I often have a cold mouth. If you've got a very warm, if you're warm bodied and you're warm, then you won't need warm water. Just cold water will do. Anyway, and you smell it first and it will have an aroma, and then you'll taste it and you just let it melt. And that's when you discover the flavors. And it's not sort of sitting there and going, I must taste X, Y, Z. It's more just you sit there and you see what comes. And sometimes nothing does. And then you take another piece and sometimes something does. And some makers will put sort of guidelines on their packaging. We tasted this. You may taste something else. sometimes I taste what they taste, some things I taste completely different. I don't tend to look at those anymore, but when I was training, I did. And I also had some flashcards that sort of, if I had a tasted a berry note or a cream note or something like that, well, was it just cream or was it, you know, whipped cream or, you know, that kind of thing. So I started very broad, and then as I went on, I'd sort of narrow it down into, okay, rather than saying I taste berries, well, what kind of berries are they that I'm tasting? But yeah, when you do taste, it is a very slow, meditative practice as you do it. Yeah.
So you have become, I won't use the word expert because I think no one really is. I don't care what anyone says. I don't think you can really become expert in anything.
I agree.
I mean, yeah. if you're saying you're an expert, then really I think it's time to. Oh, look, we won't even say that. We won't even go there because that's going to cause too many troubles.
If you're an expert, you don't want to learn anymore, and I think.
Correct. That will do. Yep, perfect.
That will do. We will leave it at that.
Yes, we shall. Otherwise, we're not getting controversial today. But
no.
So you have this knowledge. You have this knowledge and this ability, and you're bringing that to others.
Yes.
Which I always love. Like, I love when someone has a knowledge and they share that with others. However way they do it, I don't really care. I just think it's incredible. What I find quite interesting as well is you're pulling the senses of smell and taste, and you're encouraging art to come from that as well. And I would like you to sort of talk about that whole process. Like, what would it be like, for example, it's easier, if you and I were sitting together via Zoom, side by side in person, whatever, and you were taking me through this process of tasting some chocolate, but then using what I feel to make something artistic out of it. What's that like? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you show people how to do that?
Sure, and I'd love to do that one day, by the way. So if I was to sit down with you, I would do that. I would have four different chocolates in front of us to try, and we would taste one by sucking it and discovering what flavors come, and we would both jot them down. You know, we taste berries and citrus and shortbread and something else. And then to take that into art. Now, I've always loved creative art, but I've never loved making a thing. I'm not sort of one of those painters that will paint something that looks photographic or will create something that is an exact replica of something else. It's very abstract. So to tie into that, the art forms that I use are ones that have the ability to give me a bit of a guide, but then also freedom. And so if I was sitting with you and we tasted chocolate and we got these flavors from the chocolate, I would then be like, well, what color are those flavors? You know, we had berries. Okay, well, what color are your berries? What color are my berries? Are yours red? Are mine purple? We both tasted shortbread biscuit. You know, was yours a dark brown or was it a light brown or was it a mauve? We both tasted citrus. Was that a bright yellow or was it a more an orangey yellow? And that creates our colour palette, what I like to call. We've tasted on our palette and now we've got a colour palette. And we use those colours to then create something. So that may be I then bring out a whole lot of coloured pencils or crayons or paint. And we then just put those colours on a page anyway. We could make a pattern. We could make a squiggle. We can make dots. It's not prescribed. We're not drawing a sunset. We're not painting flowers. Anything could come from this. I mean, when you finish, you may look at it and go, oh, look, there's flowers over there and there's a bird sitting over there. You don't know. All you're doing is just putting colour onto a page and seeing what evolves. And that's how I will do it. And I find that giving that freedom, but with guide. So the guide is this: these are the only colors you can use. But freedom, you can go anywhere and do anything on this piece of paper, and the paper isn't precious. The paper is there to be used, and the pens aren't precious. The pens are there to be used. Gives freedom for really creative things to evolve. When I was training as an occupational therapist, one of the things I did in pairs was we did scribble drawings. So we both had a different coloured texture, and one would scribble on the page and the other would scribble over the top. And then it was like a, almost like a where's Wally? It was what can we find on the page? Is there a ghost or is there a... And it's kind of the same here but with colour, and you're creating the picture on your own. And, yeah, who knows what might come.
So let's say, for example, you and I did this on one day and, you know, we both ended up with six colours, let's say, just for this conversation. If we were to sit down the very next day with the exact same chocolates as the day before, is it possible we would have different colours coming from that session?
Possibly, yes. If the weather is different, if you're in a different environment, if you'd eaten something beforehand, but it also may be exactly the same. I've tasted chocolate in the morning and in the evening, and I'll get stronger flavours of one type in the morning and less of them in the evening. And day to day sort of can be the same thing. Yeah. And that will determine your colours. Say in the morning you tasted this really vibrant red, but when you taste exactly the same thing in the evening, that vibrant red's not vibrant anymore. It's a dark. Darker red. The colour probably wouldn't change, but the where it is on the spectrum of within, so we say it's a red. Well, red can be lots and lots of different things. Within the spectrum, it's still red, but is it bright? Is it browny coloured? Is it an earthy red? Is it, you know, purpley red, you know, it will change.
Yeah, no, I think that's incredible, because I'm going to make a leap here, but I assume that the reason the strength or shade of that colour changes is due to factors such as how tired you are, how content you are, how excited you are, like, exactly. And that opens up a whole world of possibilities of what you can then create based on that. Like, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but there is something about that I find really fascinating and really full of possibilities.
Yes, because added to that, so it also depends on your mood. So I know that if I've had a very, like the other morning, I had just had a number of unexpected and unpleasant experiences, and I had a bunch of bars that I needed to try to give feedback to someone. And I was very flustered and a little bit upset at the same time. And I'm like, I said I was going to taste these for this person, but I am not. I'm still going to taste, because I'm keeping a practice and I want to stick with a practice. So I will still do that, but I will do something where the outcome of what I'm tasting isn't to write up a report for someone. It is purely for me. So I went and tasted something that I could then create art with. I wasn't creating a report with, because of where my mood was. So if you're tired, if you're angry, never taste when you're angry, by the way. Have a hot chocolate and make it a scalding hot one so you burn your tongue. Then you'll be fine. It really depends on your mood, and that's why I do it in the morning, because I know I'm more alert in the morning. Yes, it is colder in the morning, but that also means that then I've got a hot drink, I drink hot water, so it's a hot drink. It's comforting. And then from that, I get a lot better for me anyway, I get more out of the experience than if I did it in the evening. I could taste the same thing in the evening, but I would be doing it with a tired brain. So therefore, if I tasted something in the morning and then retasted it in the evening, I'd call that my check. I tasted these flavor notes in the morning. I wrote up my little thing, or I drew my little thing, or I painted my little thing. I created something. I might not create something. I took a photo. And then in the evening, if I taste the same thing, I call that my check. So I check and go, okay, I tasted this in the morning. Can I taste it now? Is it still there? Did it come first? Did it come last? Did the flavor, was it strong like it was in the morning, or is it weak? Or I call that my check. That's just a personal practice that I do, but it definitely does change.
So does that checking and that noting the differences from the morning to the evening, say, does that form part of, like, your overall review of, like, you know, if someone gave you, they've manufactured some new bars, they're ready to pop them out to the world, but they'd like to get some feedback first, perhaps, you know, to help them promote it. Do you follow up? Like, I am curious to know what that process of, not necessarily the judging, because that's different, but the reviewing of some, like a product, what, you know, what's that kind of like?
Yeah, for sure. So it does. So I go off what I taste in the morning. But if I then taste it in the morning and go, this has got these qualities, but it would be really suited to someone who just wants something little at the end of the day, then I will taste it at the end of the day and go, that was perfect. So then in my report to that person, I would be like, this in the sort of, when I send a report to someone of what I've tasted, it's, these are the good qualities. This is what I've tasted. Here are some suggestions, if there are any, of what may be beneficial to you. But you're the maker. I'm not the maker here. You make your educated decision on where you take what I've just. I'm giving you this as an offering. You take it now. And if I taste something in the morning and go, this is ideal for a cup of tea and something little before bed, then I would say that. If it's something that has more complex flavor notes to it, there are a lot of them, and every time you taste more of one and less of the other, and that happens in the morning, and then I taste it, I'd be more likely to say to the person, this is a great experimental bar. It's a great bar to give to people who are unsure what kind of chocolate they enjoy or don't enjoy, but it's not kind of a bar you'd want at the end of the day. That would be part of a report for sure. Mm.
And do things like where it was produced affect things like the taste and the smell of chocolate?
Yes, they definitely do. So there's a maker in New Zealand, and I'd really like to do this one day. He only uses cacao from Peru. Now you'd think, okay, that's just one origin. Well, yeah, it is one origin, but within one origin, there are lots of different farms, and every farm, I think he's got cacao from 8 different farms in Peru. Every cacao's farm has a different, their cacao has a different flavor profile. Why? Because the soil's different. The rainfall may be different. The sun may be different. The way the cacao is harvested will be the same, but then how they ferment it afterwards, how they dry it afterwards, that all happens on the farm. The minerals and the nutrients within the soil will be different. The amount of water that is in the soil will be different. The amount of other trees that are grown, whether it's close to a road or not close to a road, whether it's close to a rainforest or something else, they all impact the flavor profile of the cacao, and that all happens on the farm. So this maker's got these, I think it's 8 origins from Peru, and they're all different. The chocolate that he crafts from those 8 different beans is all different. And I would love to one day do a tasting with lots of people where you all have one of, you all have 8 bars or 8 samples and you all taste and we all just do this little trip around Peru in our minds with chocolate. I think that would be, it's something I've wanted to do for a very long time and I don't know when I'll ever do it. But, yeah, the where the cacao is grown and not just where it is grown, whether that's Peru or Ecuador or Colombia or wherever, it, Madagascar, wherever it's grown, even within that there is variation.
So I think one of the things that I really like about this discussion is how much of it, and you've touched on it, is like a meditation, the process of slowing down and observing and tasting and smelling and noting and then creating something from that. Like it feels like it's a really good practice that perhaps maybe we should do more of individually. Like,
yes.
And I think it's one of those things, and look, maybe it's not chocolate. Like I know there are a handful of people in this world that don't like it. Not sure what's wrong with them, but hey, that's fine. We're not here to judge. Yeah. But I'm sure you could probably do something similar with another thing, you know, another food type that you love. And you know, certainly just, I know I myself notice it because I quite like coffee and I guess you could call me a coffee snob. So I will definitely notice a difference from the same coffee I might make at home or from a place that I visit frequently, depending on the time of day and things like that. But I hadn't really sort of thought much about how it affects my creative practice. But, you know, like if I think about when I sit down to make something, whether that's, you know, drawing or painting or sewing or whatever it might be, quite often when I begin that practice, I have something, whether it's a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, depending on the time of day and how hungry I am, it may also involve food, even if it's a slice of cake or a biscuit or, you know, a couple of bits of chocolate. And I think many of us probably do this that you're talking about, but we're not actually aware of it. And the fact that you're bringing attention to people to reminding them of these other senses and how it can impact or change or affect our artwork, I think is a really unique way of looking at it. And I think it's definitely something people should be more aware of and embrace and pull more into their art.
Yeah, and to add to that, to sort of someone used the word the other day, they said they do chocolate yoga. When they're tasting, it's chocolate yoga. It's yoga for their palate. We do yoga for our bodies. This is yoga for your palate. But I mean,
I like
just
that.
With your coffee there, Kim, I mean, you could sit there and you could note the different flavors that you get from the start of the coffee. I mean, if I think about, I don't drink coffee, but if I was to, I would get a probably a cappuccino, to be honest. But then you've got sort of the first sip where you've got that slight bitterness of the cacao that's on the top, and then you've got the foam that comes next, and then you've got the coffee, and then you've got the really dark bit at the bottom. Sort of if you think about that, well, you've got this graded levels of brown that you've just drunk, basically. Or, you know, if you look at your lunch plate, you know, you may have a salad that day and you may have greens on there and you may have reds on there and you may have fawny brownie colours on there, or, you know, maybe there's purple on there, I don't know. So it's this practice of just going, it's a slowing. And I think in a world where everything is very geared to not slowing, going in the opposite direction is I find really fun and really enjoyable, because it says to the notion of the world, well, excuse me, I'm in charge here, not you, and I will go at this speed, thank you. Not to say that there aren't situations where we have to meet you know, deadlines and things like that. But at the same time, you do that with intention, and you do that with you carry that. Like, I mean, if you sit down in the morning with your coffee, you can then carry that stillness, that just sitting there and noticing. You can carry that into part of your day. And I think that that's really, I mean, I don't taste every day in the morning. There are 2 days where I definitely taste in the morning, and that's either if there's a report I need to write, or I definitely want to make something, because if I make something, that'll take the rest of the day. The time that I always taste, though, is in the evening, because my senses are less in the evening, and if I really don't know a bar, if it passes what I call the evening test, then I know it's good. The evening test, I'm not very good with acidity. So if you're a coffee lover, you will love acidity. You will love citrusy kind of acid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good with that. And if that is a very strong flavor note in a chocolate bar, it is the most prominent for me in the evening. And so if I get none of that in the evening, I'm like, right, well, this one's going to now be tasted in the morning. If I get a lot of that in the evening, I'm like, right, this one's going to go into being paired with something else, or being, I love doing a lot of different pairings and finding new pairings. So, and they're not your common pairings. So, you know, does this go well with, cooked mushrooms or dried beetroot, or I they're my kind of pairings, not your strawberries and chocolate. Although I do that as well. But if it passes what I call the evening test, which is a totally Jessica term, then it goes to the morning, and then it's kind of like the cacao's gone, yes, we live up to your standards. We're now in the morning category, and now we'll turn to art. It's I can't remember what your question was, but it is a process of noticing.
Well, I think the evening test is pretty vital, because for a lot of people, and you know, I know I'm generalizing here, but for a lot of people, the evening is a chance that they can catch, even if it's only 30 minutes to themselves, or just a little bit more quiet time. That's when people will perhaps reach for a bar of chocolate, and they think of it as an indulgence, which, you know, I really don't think it is. I think it should be enjoyed as much as anything else. But I think you're right. Like, of an evening, you want that, whatever it to be, you want it to be good. Like, you want it to make you feel good, because it's like your little treat to yourself at the end of a hard day, for example. How lovely is it to have some chocolate? So I really like that. I think you've got a good way of looking at it. You know, it's got a big test to pass, and when it passes, it comes into the fold.
It passes muster, and therefore it goes into the next stage of its life. We're talking about next stages of life. So I'm doing, for all those people that live in Australia, come to Tasmania in July and August. I'm doing an exhibition, and my exhibition is a chocolate exhibition. And I don't know if I've mentioned this to you, Kim, so this may be
impressive. This is new. This is breaking news for me as well as the listeners. Yay. Exciting.
Well, I was working on it yesterday, because the premise, it's a group exhibition. It's me and one other artist, so hence the term group. But the theme that we came up with was mystery and curiosity, sort of uncovering the unknown, but it's a mystery. And because that kind of ties in with his artwork, which is quite tricky to explain in one or two words. But for me, what I'm doing is I am deliberately doing what a lot of chocolate consumers, so not the makers, not but the people who then buy it and consume it, what they try and avoid doing. I am blooming chocolate. So that's when, so when a chocolate maker gets the beans, they have to roast them. Then they, and that eases off the outer hard shell from the inside nibs. So then they crack that shell off. And those nibs are then ground into a paste. That paste can then be aged in what they call concrete, so big blocks, sort of 5 kilo blocks, for a couple of months, or it can then be immediately turned into chocolate. And when you turn it into chocolate, chocolate is, a cacao bean is 50% solid and 50% butter. So when you want it to set into chocolate bars, you have to get to a certain crystallization structure of that butter, the cacao butter that's in the chocolate, to allow it to set. Now, when your chocolate blooms, you're taking that crystallized structure and you're changing that crystallized structure. So the crystallized structure is called V5, but when you bloom it, you're then muddling that crystallized structure, and it'll get these white and multicolored brown patternings all over it. Now, your chocolate is still fine to eat. It's just been bloomed, which just means that tempering process, the bringing, the aligning of the crystallized structure has been broken. And my artwork is putting an array of different chocolate bars in sunlight to deliberately bloom them to see what the artwork comes out as. So I'm not making the artwork, the chocolate is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And now I can't wait to see
chocolate,
it.
The chocolate is I'll send you a picture of one of them when we get off the call. The chocolate is making the artwork, which I will then create into artwork by taking photos of it, because I also take photos. So I will then turn that into prints, and then that will be my artwork that is on the wall. And my exhibition runs for the whole of July, and then in Tasmania, August, we have this thing called Winterfest, mm-hmm. which is a whole weekend of chocolate-related things. So it kind of is nice that my exhibition precedes that. But my idea is that when people come to the exhibition to view the artwork, they will get to taste a piece of that chocolate that they then see up on the wall. They're tasting what is on the wall. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool.
That's my exhibition. So people come.
Yeah. Everybody get to Tasmania.
It's winter. Come to Tasmania. I mean, where else could you go? So, yeah, I can't remember how we got into that next stage of existence or something. We were on a tangent. But
I like that because you're taking it to another level. Like, and I think, you know, as artists and creatives, we're sort of constantly thinking about what's next. And I like that. Yes. I like where you're going next with this. This is really, I'm loving it. I can't
you.
Wait.
Thank
I think
you.
It's incredible.
Thank you. It's been so fascinating a process too, because I'll show my work, or I'll mention it and I'll show, you know, one or two pictures to a chocolate maker, and they'll be like, oh wow, check out the bloom on this that we haven't tempered yet, or on this that happened the other day. And then I'll show it to someone who consumes chocolate, and they'll be like, oh, you bloomed your chocolate, that's a shame. And I'm like, can't you see the art? And they're like, oh, but it was that chocolate maker. Oh, why didn't you tweet there? Like, you're missing the point. I'm immortalizing these people in like prints. They're gonna be amazing. And you're just bemoaning the fact. It's like me going, here, Kim, here's a tube of paint, but you can't open it. It just has to sit up on your shelf and never be used. Because as soon as you open it, you know, it's no longer a full tube of paint. It's like you've opened it. Or it's me like, saying to you, look, my hens, I don't have hens, but pretend I did. My chickens have just laid a whole bunch of eggs, and look how beautiful the shells are. They're all these different, you know, mottly spotted colours, but you can't use them. So you're just going to have to let them sit in the fridge, because if you break it, well, you've snapped the shell, like you've broken this. I don't know. Maybe it's the artist in me. I don't know what it is. But I just sat there the other day when I mentioned it to someone who consumes chocolate, doesn't make it, and they were bemoaning it, and I just say, I can't get on with your sadness, because to me I'm making something, and that's exciting. And then I was like, well maybe this is gearing me up for the exhibition when I'm going to get
some. Well, it is. It's getting you ready for controversy. And I mean, let's be honest, right? Like,
yeah.
Art is always going to upset somebody. Somebody's not going to like it. Somebody's going to think it's silly or it's a waste of time. Yeah, and
that's right.
So you're just hitting that.
I'm just making it.
Yeah. Oh, Jessica, honestly, that is just lovely. And I mean, you've got to laugh, because why not?
Well, if I didn't laugh, I'd cry or get frustrated. Yeah. But I just found it really amusing. So I shook my head and went, yeah, you've missed the point. And I can't be bothered using my brain space and my breath to explain myself. So I'll leave it there, shall I?
Yeah, fair enough. So I think I didn't bother. The biggest takeaway I think listeners can probably take from this is, one, have that chocolate that you really want and keep telling yourself that, you know, you shouldn't have. But two, yes, but think about
good stuff. The stuff that actually gives you flavour, not the stuff from the supermarket that is just sugar. Have something that is actually going to be good for not just your soul and your taste buds, but also good for somebody else, the person who grew it. Like, do good by eating chocolate, do good for yourself and for the person that grew it. Yeah. Yeah. So I agree. Have that piece of chocolate.
So to wrap up, where is the best piece? Because people are going to have to follow you so they can then find out about this exhibition and everything else you're doing. Where is the best place for people to follow you online?
Sure. So I'm most active, I think is the word people like to use. I'm most active on Instagram. So that's Jessica. There are no underscores in this. Jessica Chocolate Journeys. Now the chocolate is with a K. So Jessica and then the word CHOKOLATE Journeys. You'll find me there. I'm also on Facebook as Chocolate Journeys. And I don't have a website, but if you also reach out to me on Facebook as Jessica Tivendale, or, I have an email. It's JEZZICATIV @gmail.com. And I'm always happy to be emailed, to be asked questions, I'm always up for running, you know, a tasting, whether that's online or in person or catering it to whatever a person would like or is interested in or wants to discover. I just want to create pockets of wonder and excitement and, well, I mean, my tagline is flavor-fueled adventures. I want flavor to fuel something that you would have missed if you hadn't tasted chocolate first. Yeah.
Perfect. Sounds like a lovely way to enjoy a moment.
Yes, couldn't agree more.
Well, thank you, Jessica. I really appreciate you making time for me and for the posse in general. I can't wait to see this exhibition. And, good luck with more chocolate.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Kim. I'm grateful to have been part of the posse. Thank you.
Thank you.
If we were to provide you with some PayPal details or perhaps Buy Me a Coffee details, would you be interested in making a one-off payment to support us? In return, you'd be helping to keep the podcast going and would also get access to our bonus episodes. Let me know what you think via Kim @artsupplyposse.com or via Instagram.